Hello, this is Leisha Holmes of Key Recruitment, and I'm absolutely thrilled to be joined today by quite a familiar face for those who follow us on LinkedIn, because we often share Amelia's things. It's Amelia Sordell, who is a recruitment marketing specialist. Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. Well, thank you for agreeing to come on our YouTube channel. There's quite a lot of things that we're going to talk about today, but for those who aren't familiar with who you are, which is very probably unlikely, would you like to explain who you are, please?
Sure. I'm Amelia Sordell. I'm a recruitment marketer, I guess, by trade. I help recruitment agencies and small professional service businesses grow their brand online, mainly through LinkedIn, but through the general online ecosystem.
Fantastic. So can you just explain how you made the leap from recruitment consultant to marketer? How did that happen?
Yeah, it was kind of a natural thing. Like I've gone through this story a couple of times. Like it's one of those weird things where I was getting pulled up on not making enough calls. It was back in the day. Well, I say back in the day because I know some agencies still do it, but back in the day when you had 500 calls to make a week, and that was your target. And you know, if you weren't making those kind of calls a week, you'd get pulled up on them. And I wasn't really making any calls per day. I was doing like one or two, but spending a few hours on the phone, and no one could really realize why I was doing that, how I was making money with making no calls. And about 6 months into my career in recruitment, I realized that what I was doing is actually marketing. I was putting myself out there. I was sending people email campaigns, all the things that I had discovered on Google, I was applying to my career. And very quickly kind of cut my teeth in recruitment by being a marketer in a recruiter's seat rather than a recruitment person trying to do marketing. So it's a natural progression for me, and one I'm very happy I made.
Absolutely. And like you say, because you've come from that seat, it gives you a real credibility with the audience that you're now talking to. And so many recruiters have had to, I guess, upskill themselves as marketeers with no training really. So from what you observe online, generally, what do recruiters do well, and then what do recruiters not do so well that maybe turns you off?
I don't know about turns me off. I think there's a number of, in fact, I think all recruitment people in the space want to do content, because I think everyone realizes that there is a real value in creating content at scale, because ultimately that is the same sort of ROI as you would get from making phone calls, but it's just a lot more efficient. So everyone understands why they should be doing it, but very few people do it well. And I think fundamentally the reason why that is because people think they know what their customer wants, what their audience wants, but actually they don't. They don't really do that deep dive into asking those questions, calling up their candidates, calling up their clients and saying, hey, like, what is your greatest challenge right now? How can I help you? Could you give me an example of one time or added value to your life or to your day? Instead of doing those things, we go, oh, they're going to want to know how to do a CV, or they're going to want to know how to make their LinkedIn look good, or they're going to want to know how to manage their team remotely. Like all these things you can find on Google. Like you don't need to be told those by a recruitment consultant, but what your recruitment consultant can do for you is address your challenges at scale and help other people that are going through those same challenges to start a discussion about it. Mm-hmm. So that fundamentally, people have the right sentiment, but the wrong kind of way of attacking it. And I think that's where the disconnect comes with personal brand and LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. And of course, everybody talks about personal branding, and then there's this level of disengagement, I guess, between, and I can see my competitors doing that, and so maybe I should go and do that. And I think maybe recruitment consultants get into a bit of a panic about it, maybe.
That is so true. Like, we are such an insular industry. We don't ever look beyond the recruitment ecosystem. We always go, oh, he's doing this, like, let's do that too. Well, that person brands their stuff really well, let's do what they're doing. No one steps back and goes, actually, what everyone is doing is rubbish, so let's try and do something different. I always reference the SaaS ecosystem as being like the North Star for me, because I think the way that SaaS businesses have positioned themselves as solutions rather than services, obviously software as a service, is fundamentally where you get that ROI from. Like, if you're positioning yourself as a solution to someone's problem as opposed to a service you're providing,
yes,
game changes. And that all happens through marketing. That's not some kind of packaged up productization of your service. That is how you've communicated your service to your customer, and that is marketing. That's branding. That's how you talk, that's how you walk, that's how you conduct yourselves in pitches, that's how you post stuff on social, it's how you do your videos when you're walking down the street and you post them on LinkedIn. Like, all of these things position yourself as a solution to someone's problem, which is what you're doing in professional services. You're fixing a problem for someone.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, very often your customer doesn't know what the problem is that you're trying to fix.
Precisely. You know, if you
see why a lot of people get it wrong.
Yeah, 100%. Like, when I was a recruiter, my space initially was SaaS salespeople. And there was a lot of people in that space to begin with when I first started there. And I kind of carved myself out a niche in behavior analytics and big data. That was just something I really enjoyed working with. And I quickly realized that there were a lot of people talking about best in class service and, you know, professional service and like just being the best service they could possibly be. Mm-hmm. And actually, that's not how SaaS people speak. SaaS people speak on a solution base. Yeah. And so a lot of leaders were going, oh, I've got this massive quota to hit this quarter, but I've not got enough people to hit it. Like, how am I going to hit this massive quota? So the solution to that is a person, right? So if you're positioning yourself as a solution to that salesperson's problem in hitting their quota, rather than going, oh, you need help with your recruitment.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's kind of changing the way in which you communicate the exact same thing.
Yeah, and it's just maybe simplifying it, actually.
Yeah, exactly. And not making it complicated. We love overcomplicating it.
We do, don't we? I mean, your own videos have definitely become the benchmark now for so many people. So what would your top tips be on creating video content?
Top tips on creating video content. First of all, don't overcomplicate it. To go back to your earlier point, it's really easy to overthink what you're trying to say. And I think the reason why people come to you to watch videos, or the reason why someone would stop in their feed to watch your video, is because you're shortcutting something they want to know about. Yeah. So whether it is, you know, best hiring practices, or how to create a video on LinkedIn about creating videos, like shortcutting that so people get a great outcome after they've watched your video is like the number one thing. Make it really simple. Keep it under 2 minutes. Make sure it's got subtitles.
Yeah.
Make sure your lighting is good. Yeah. You're clear, you're coherent. You stick to the topic that you're trying to stick to. It's really easy to get sidetracked. We've just had, before this, you hit record, we've just had a big dialogue about stuff that went all over the place. And that's really, really easy to do when you're trying to convey something to people on video. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things, but I think, yeah, be clear, be consistent, subtitle it, good lighting, make sure you stick to your main point and you'll be fine.
Because you can always do another video. That's the thing.
You can always do another video, and done is always better than perfect. Always. If you're striving for perfection, you will never post anything.
It's interesting that on my own personal brand, on the videos that I've shared, certainly since COVID, when I've got back into doing the videos, is that some of the most popular ones and most viewed have been the ones where I've literally been, you know, out up Holcombe Hill talking about something that resonates across all industries, not just recruitment, and it's something that's affecting everybody. So it's interesting. Isn't it? You don't need to overthink it. You can just, it's things that you're passionate about, that you're quite knowledgeable about, and engaging with people in that way, rather than, you know, overthinking things, which I think recruiters do tend to do.
Absolutely. And I think fundamentally, like, our end consumer, so for me, it's recruitment agency owners. For you, it's also that we have the same end consumer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We as the producers of the content overvalue the production of the content over the message, whereas the people receiving the message value the message over the content production. Right. So when you can switch your mindset and go, actually, if I'm walking down the street and I haven't got the time to add subtitles to this, but I need to get this message out, that's way more important than you sitting at home, sitting on that video for 3 days. Oh, I don't look very good. My makeup's not right. Like, my hair looks funny. I've got my big shiny red face. I've just been for a run. Like, none of those things matter if the quality of the message is right.
And also, if you don't care what you look like, which I fall into that bracket, because I'm maybe just because I'm older, I don't care what I look like. It's funny that you say that. In my most recent video, I did the subtitles whilst I was still walking, and it's very clear that I didn't really pay attention to what I'd actually been saying. So the subtitles don't really match, but there is a disclaimer in the notes on the video saying, sorry, it's Sunday, let me off. So I agree with you. I think that very often, you know, it's like any time you do a business call, it's about, you know, you can be thinking the call's going to be about one thing, but it's buyer signal. You know, it's listening to what the audience needs. That's great. Now, obviously, we've become much closer since you set up a Women Unleashed community during COVID, which has been amazing. So what motivated you to do that, first of all? And secondly, how do you feel that women in business particularly can connect better to each other?
It's a good question. So why did I set up Women Unleashed? I set up Women Unleashed because I was really bored of seeing the same crap every day from women's groups, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever, talking about like women empowerment and like posting all these positive messages, but like everything was very woo woo. And I don't know if that's a term that you use in the UK, but like very like kind of fluffy and not really much substance. And I'm someone who's quite pragmatic, and I want serious value. I want to know how I can get from A to Z as quick as possible. I want to bring up other women, and I want them to learn from my mistakes so they don't do the same thing. And that's something I'm trying to instill on the exec that I work with. And there wasn't really anything like that. There was no Facebook group, no Instagram page, no nothing. I came across nothing that I could find that served me as a customer. So I thought, screw it, why don't I just create a WhatsApp group and see if anyone else wants to be a part of it. And ultimately a lot of people have been, and I've still got like 30 odd people that I need to add to the group. So growing, yeah. I just, it's now a bit bigger than I think I can manage. I don't know if we need to migrate it off to Facebook or something, but
might be better. But I mean, if someone's in as I'm sure you are, I'm in a million groups on WhatsApp, but actually this is one where I do go and check, and I do scroll back very often.
I always scroll back. And I think the thing is, it's because we're all of that same mindset. Like everyone in that group, whether you're a business leader or not, is someone who is looking for inspiration from somewhere, who is inspired by other women, who wants to empower other women, who even if they don't feel confident in themselves, have the confidence to speak to other women about these things. And I think certainly I can speak hand on my heart, I'm a very confident person, and I feel 5 years ago I would not have been able to say that. I would not have been doing something like this because this would have terrified me. And so I would like to think that by setting up a group like this and encouraging other women in business to speak to each other helps women like me 5 years ago go, actually, I've got this. I can do this. If she can do this, then I can do this. And that's what it's about. It's about that support, that you know, this is my tribe. These are the women who are.
There's a real sense of
nurture.
Yeah.
And it's really important. Really important. Of any group of people that are underrepresented in business should be supporting each other. And women for me is my jam. Like I love supporting women. That's like my hobby. I'm always lecturing my girlfriends on like I'm trying to talk them into launching businesses. Like, I'm like, you're really good at makeup. Go and launch a makeup business. Like, I'm always that person. And I think, yeah, it's really important to have people like that in your life that are encouraging you, whether they're your friends in reality or not. You need that like support group to keep you on the right trajectory.
And it's wonderful to have it in a professional context, but actually there are no egos with it. And I'm speaking with someone within the group, there are no egos. I don't care what position someone is. There just is such a sense of collaboration and support and mutual inspiration of each other. And, you know, everyone, like you say, it's not this disingenuous, go girl, you know, come on. It's like, no, this is, I'm adding value by saying this to you. So I think it's, you know, there's something very special there, and I'm thrilled to be part of it. Now, one other thing we share is that we're both working mums. You have said recently, I think it was on your Instagram, that you believe that this goal of work-life balance is actually a myth. Why do you think that?
Maybe I'm just too kind of focused on everything, but I don't believe that you can have a balance, because a balance would imply that there's some kind of harmonious kind of, you know, equal part of each side in your life and your work. And your work is your life. Your life is your work. So I don't believe there is such thing as a work-life balance. When I'm at home, yes, I'm present with my children and I'm obsessed with them. Like, that's my favorite thing to do. However, if I don't have my work, I would not be able to be that present, that happy, that engaged with my kids, because I wouldn't be happy. And so this whole work-life balance thing, like, every single one of us, regardless of how we feel about the person that we're working for or the business that we're in, doesn't clock off at 5 p.m. and then just go, I'm not going to think about work. Yeah. Not, there's not a single person in the world that does that. It doesn't matter whether you're doing something just for a paycheck or whether you're trying to build a brand. You don't clock off at one time and then go, right, I'm at home now, so I'm going to forget about it, especially in lockdown. Yeah. Our work has become our home.
It's blended. But it's all blend.
It's completely blended. It's like some kind of, I just said it the other day, I was like some kind of lopsided crochet. Like it's not a balance. It's just like this weird weaved in thing. Like I'll be doing stuff with my child and talking about all kinds of random stuff. And then I look back and I go, actually, that was kind of similar to what I do with the clients I work with. Like, oh. I'm working here. Like, what I'm doing with my daughter is working. But it's, to me, it's play. So I think, there's no such thing in my book. I know a lot of people disagree with me. I had a bit of a debate with a life coach recently who was telling me that I needed a more balanced work life. And I was like, no.
Speaking of someone who's always been, I've been a working parent for nearly 16 years, and I've set up my business because as he was, my life, and I didn't believe that going back into the business that I worked in before could accommodate what I was looking for flexibility wise. And I'm actually inclined to agree with you on it. And I've always thought, is that because it's my business? So for me, like, and people will corroborate this, I will often leave a voice note for a candidate on a Saturday night as I'm walking my dog, because I'm thinking, oh my God, that client's a brilliant match, because that's just when it pops in my head.
Yeah.
Because Key Recruitment is my third child. It literally, that's how much I love my business and what I do. And actually, I think you're right. I think that things have shifted, certainly in the last 3-4 months, where that's happened to a lot of people, regardless of whether they're a business owner or not. And I think because of social media, you know, mm-hmm. you are one person on LinkedIn, you are one person on Facebook. No, I don't think that's the case anymore. I think people generally merge it all together. I think what I will say as a caveat is that I think it's really important to therefore have clear, distinct switch off times. So,
definitely, yeah.
You know, and whatever it is, whether it's listening to podcasts, listening to music, you know, dancing around the living room with your kids, going for a walk with your dog, is actually using music or something to genuinely switch off. Otherwise, you'll burn out. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I nearly hit post about burnout this morning, and I was like, is this? Will people resonate with that? I, in the last couple of weeks, have definitely felt that impact of not having, you're the same. I'm not a business owner yet, but I have been a business owner previously, but I have that inability to switch off at night. Like, I just, if, like you say, if you're on a Saturday and you think of something, you're like, shit, that's a really good idea. Like, you will act on it straight away, just because that's the nature of who you are. And this whole lockdown thing has just perpetuated that, because there's no, I'm getting on a tube now, you know, the office is closing, I'm going to go home, going to make dinner. Like, there is no kind of clear societal etiquette as to when you switch off and when you start and all the rest of it. So it's just perpetuated this ongoing, like, work. And it's taken me kind of a couple of weeks to go, right, I need to slow down here, because it's going to end up in me not being very well, and I just need to calm down.
It's true. I mean, I have actually booked to go to Cornwall in a couple of weeks, which sounds,
I know, I think that's fabulous. I'm very jealous.
I'm very excited. It's like an 8-hour car journey, but we're going back to a cottage that we've been to for years. My daughters can't wait. And for me, I will switch off. You know, I'm very lucky to have Shannon. If anything's going on, I will. And actually, I can feel myself, although I'm, you know, much more mature, I'm very good at coping strategies. I've had, you know, we've had our therapist on before to talk about how to cope with stress. I'm still a human being. And the fact is, it has been, you know, full throttle in a pandemic for the last 16 weeks or something stupid. I think it's really important that people are aware of what's maybe changing physically or metaphysically, emotionally, and actually being able to go, it doesn't matter, for the sake of a day, I am just going to sit and watch movies for a day, or I am just going to go and take the day off and walk somewhere. So I'm glad you brought that up. I think it's a really
good thing. You have to put yourself first, and like, even little things, like for me, like you say, that whole balancing working mum and being at work is difficult. And as I said, I don't think there's a balance. So it, for me, it's just going for a walk every morning. Like, me and my husband, or if he's not available, I just stick my earphones in and I listen to a podcast and just go for a walk for an hour. It's not strenuous. I'm not doing it for exercise. I'm simply doing it to change my environment. And that, you have to do that. Otherwise, you lose your mind. That's good. Really, really. I said something else there, but you lose your mind.
I've not already done so. Given we've both got such a huge love for the recruitment industry, as a final question, what are your hopes for the recruitment industry as we develop into this new normal?
My hopes. I hope that business owners and managers have taken this time to kind of reassess what has been working and what hasn't been working in their business, and take a step back to look at, you know, the kind of traditional recruitment model as being outdated and not giving them the kind of, it's not giving them the business that they want to have. So I hope the new normal is embracing marketing. It's not like a one marketer to 50 consultants thing. It's like a marketing powerhouse to a couple of salespeople. I hope that people take digital marketing seriously and don't just think it's posting a couple of LinkedIn posts every month. I hope that people realize that inbound marketing is the future, and that if you're not generating minimum 30% from inbound, you're failing. I hope that people leverage their relationships that they've built for further income instead of chasing cold leads. We have this weird obsession in recruitment with being lit cold first, and we step over warm and hot traffic to get to those cold leads. And for me, that is mental.
Low-hanging fruit. Oh, I know. I'm going to go and try those trees over there that have never heard of me.
But it's so true, right? Like, everyone in recruitment does that. They go cold leads, cold call, cold call, cold call. It's like, okay, well, who have you worked with in the last year? Let's tap into them. They know, they like, they trust us. They've already bought from us. Stepping over hundreds of thousands of pounds. And ultimately, if you can fix all those things, have a high barrier to entry, have a great training program, you will create a business that has a massive margin per consultant. Everyone's earning loads of money, and you will change recruitment's crap reputation. Because that's
I hope you get it right. I really hope you got that right, because I'm with you every step of the way on that. Oh, this has been absolute joy. I actually think we could probably talk all afternoon.
I know.
we'll do another one, but thank you so much. And to anyone who's interested, should they get in touch with you about joining the Women Unleashed group?
Yes, please reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm sure we'll pop all the bits and bobs in the show notes, but yeah, please reach out to me on LinkedIn. If you're a woman in professional services, come and join us. It's a lot of fun. Women Unleashed group.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your support, Amelia. You take care.
Thank you.